My name is Jarvis Cocker. I'm sitting here in the dressing room in the Philharmonic Hall in Cologne, speaking in my normal monotone voice.
You could read fairy tales.
Yeah, I do like that. I mean, I'm coming to the stage now. My son is actually here with me at the moment, but he's 11 now, so he's kind of coming to the time where he probably won't want me to read bedtime stories to him anymore. And I actually really enjoy doing that. It's one of the pleasures of my life. Sometimes I do it on the radio program. I'll read some stories or some poems and things. But I like to hear stories and things read aloud because, you know, I guess originally that's how they all stories would have been told before writing and everything. That was the way that stories got transmitted.
Where did the idea come from to come to Cologne and do this with Chilly Gonzalez? And what is it all about? Because I haven't seen it. I've just heard some of your rehearsals. And it was all hush-hush and very secret. So what's it all about?
Well, for a long time, I'd wanted to write some songs with Gonzalez. You know, we'd met over the years. And then about just over 2 years ago, I stayed in a hotel in Los Angeles and it had a piano in the room. And I thought, oh, that's good. And I thought, oh, wouldn't it be great if you could write, like, some songs about things that went on in this room and the piano, as if the piano kind of had absorbed all the events that happened in the room and then played them out to you. But, of course, then the trouble was that I can't play the piano. But then I thought, this could be it then. So I talked to Gonzalez about the idea. And so then we started writing some songs together. He wrote the musical parts and I came up with words. And we've been kind of writing those ever since. Yeah, yesterday was the first time we actually played them in front of human beings. And they seemed to quite like them. So that was quite good.
Any chance of releasing it at some stage or doing a proper tour?
Yeah, well, we're not sure what it's going to be, whether it's going to be a stage show or a record or even a film. I went out to Los Angeles and did some filming and I think what we'd like it to be is like a show that had some elements of film in it, but then also performance as well. And so a bit of a mixture, really. We'd like to think we've invented a new form of entertainment.
You seem to enjoy that filmic thing now after the documentary about Pulp. I've watched it for the first time when it was shown in Cologne the other week, and I enjoyed it so much. And a lot of it, I don't know, it wasn't just retrospective, but how did you feel when you did it? Was it kind of like, I have to go back to the old rubbish again? Or was it rather kind of actually quite nice to look back?
I was just happy that we had a record of that last period where Pulp got together and played, you know. I vaguely had it in my mind that it would be good to make a film or to have some record of it. But as is usual with me, I have ideas, but I don't often follow them through. And then I met Florian, the guy who made the film. He probably told you that he kind of got in touch with me through a mutual friend when he was in London for the London Film Festival, showed me his film that he was showing there, and then talked about how he'd like to make a film about Pulp. And we talked about various ideas, and it was weird, you know, I'd never met him, and then within 2 weeks or 3 weeks of having met him, he was making the film. So it was I quite liked the fact that it just happened very spontaneously. And also that then he got sent on this kind of weird reconnaissance mission up to Sheffield, a city he'd never been to, and had to kind of meet people and try and make a film out of it.
You know what, that's what I liked a lot about the film. Like, this whole, it wasn't just about this whole Pulp groupie fan base thing. It was more about the city itself and what it meant to the band and what made, you know, what influenced the band about the city. And did you choose any of all this? I mean, or the scene where, you know, where you started throwing toilet paper at people?
Well, the toilet paper thing was a thing that we did at the concert because that was when Pulp first started off. We always were trying to, you know, put on an extravaganza, but always on no budget at all because we were all unemployed. So toilet roll is a really easy way to decorate a stage. You just get a few different colours and you just kind of weave it around. Now, the problem, it looks good. The problems are, number one, it's flammable, probably quite illegal. Number two is you're always kind of bumping into it and then pulling things over and getting tangled up in it. So a lot of pulp shows did tend to end up in a bit of a mess. But because we had a section of the concert where we played some very, very early pulp songs, I wanted to try and get that early pulp feel on a bigger scale. So we encouraged the audience to throw the toilet rolls around and create this kind of lattice work that mimicked the stage look of early pulp shows. And it kind of, yeah, they joined in, and it was like a really nice moment, actually.
You've been doing music for such a long time, and now you are also a music journalist. How do you, you know, perceive the music scene these days after, like, having been part of it for such a long time? Is it hard for younger bands to break through like you did back then?
I don't... it's funny, like, my nephew is in a band now, so he's really at the start. I think they've played 5 concerts, so he's really, you know, they're really at the kind of beginning of their career. It's weird, like, he gets people to go come and see him. Like, I was saying to him the other day, at least people come to see you when you play a concert. Because I remember in the early days of Pulp, often there would be, like, 2 people there or 3 people, you know. Now that people kind of communicate on Facebook and things like that, at least they kind of seem to get people to come and see them. And I suppose, you know, you can put your music out there for people to listen to as well. You don't have to press it onto a record. But then you've got to deal with the fact that that everybody's doing that, and so there's this gigantic roar of background noise, which it's very difficult to make yourself heard above. And also, I suppose I have to mention that boring thing that supposedly the music industry is dead now, so there's no money for anybody anymore or whatever. But I think music, yeah, it's going into a different stage for sure. I think maybe I grew up in that time when you tried to distill your songs into a definitive version, which, and people would spend, you know, a year in the studio and recording things. And I think that's kind of over, you know, that kind of thing is over. I think maybe it's gone back to what it was more through the rest of time, really. Like where we started off our conversation talking about, you know, stories at one time would have just been a performance passed on from mouth to ear around a country, and maybe music's getting back to that a little bit, that it's more about the social thing and playing a song and that's it, rather than coming out with an artifact at the end.
Isn't music that? I mean, isn't music just kind of conveying zeitgeist or a piece of popular culture in whatever way it is?
I grew up with music being a very central part of your culture, and people define themselves through what music they like. So it's like, oh, I'm a punk, or I'm a mod, I'm a rock, or whatever. You know, that would say, you were really saying, I've made a life decision here that I'm following a certain path. And also, you know, people were really into the charts, and that was almost like a sport that they would follow their band and see where they were. Had their record gone up this week in the charts, or had it gone down? And I do think that that side to it, as it being a central social thing, it isn't quite as central as it was.
This is something that is so British. Like, I remember I started working for British Forces Radio when I was 14. And I remember everyone sitting on Sunday afternoon, listening to the charts, wondering what their favourite bands is doing. Mm. And here in Germany, it's like no one would ever give a damn. And I thought it was so cool, because I was like, wow, there are people who are like myself.
Yeah, it's like it was a national pastime, and people, they felt, I suppose, that you felt that you were part of it, because if you bought a record, that could conceivably affect it, you know, affect the outcome and stuff. So it was, I think that was a moment, you know, and I don't want to be nostalgic about it, because there's no point really, but it was, I think it was quite a good moment, because it was like an example of a kind of a capitalist thing, you know, a record industry, but it was also quite democratic in the way that people bought records. And back in the olden days, there didn't seem to be any way in which record companies could really control it, as in they would often hype bands or stuff like that, but then if the public didn't like them and didn't buy the records, they wouldn't become anything.
No.
And sometimes records would come out of nowhere that people just decided that they liked the sound of. So I thought there was a democracy to it, and it was exciting. And I kind of miss the fact that it's not around anymore, but I'm not going to cry about it.
I mean, you're on the other side now also. I mean, just using a very old phrase here, you're now on the side of spinning the records on the radio. So you kind of introduce people now to new sounds.
I suppose so. I mean, my show isn't as based around new things as a lot of other shows. But there are artists, certainly a few artists that I wouldn't have heard their records if I hadn't have had them sent in to the show. And I've played them, and maybe I've been the first person to play them, yeah.
Do you think it would make sense to have stations like BBC Six Music around the world?
It almost got shut down in the UK. And that was part of... I think part of the thing of saving this station was making the BBC realise that they had something, maybe that they hadn't bargained for, because I think when they set up Six Music, they wanted to promote digital radio, and they wanted people to go out and buy digital radios and kind of prepare the way to, I suppose, one day it'll all switch over to being digital, because for some reason that seems to be what's happening in the world. And so from their point of view, they thought it had failed because not enough people were listening to the station. But actually what they had got in the interim, the station had turned into the only place you could hear alternative music. And that, you know, and although maybe not as many people were listening to it as Radio 1, the people who did listen to it were very, very passionate about it. And that's, I think that's when they realised that they'd almost by accident created this thing that people really valued very highly, then they realised that they couldn't really get rid of it.
Richard Hawley, are you still good mates? I mean, he is one of the people who kind of, you know, put really old-fashioned music back on fashion again.
I guess so, yeah. I mean, I still see Richard quite a lot, and I think when I go home from here, I'll be going back to the north of England, and I hope they're going to see him around New Year. Well, I think, you know, the thing was with Richard is that he was brought up with that music. He really was, you know, his father played guitar in bands in the 50s and passed on records and taught him how to play guitar, and he really is steeped in that music. It's not like he just went and bought a rockabilly compilation when he was 14, you know. He kind of played in rockabilly bands. I think he went on tour with his uncle when he was 14 or something. Didn't really go to school for much of the last few bits because he was out touring Germany with this guy called, what was he called, Chuck Fowler or something. And apparently they came over and they played lots of like beer kellers in Germany. Yeah. So I think the thing that I admire about Richard is just, like you say, he kind of brought a style of music that had been neglected or people had kind of forgotten about back in. And when he first started doing that, nobody else was doing it, and I suppose it was considered a bit unfashionable or whatever. And in the interim, you know, now quite a few people, like I heard that George Ezra the other day, Budapest song.
Yeah, no.
That's quite like a Hawley song. I'm not saying I like it, but, you know, the style of it, in a way, isn't that far away from a Richard Hawley song.
Yeah, Richard's got the better voice, though.
Well, I agree with you, of course. I have to say that or he beat me up. But, you know, he has kind of brought that it's kind of single-handedly brought that kind of music back, in a way.
You know what, Richard sings the more romantic thing. Well, if you think about comparing it with you, or comparing it to you, for example, you're getting to the point, you've got songs like Underwear and Talk About Breasts and Feeling Cold Love and all that. So is that something that people kind of still talk to you about? They think, like, why do you talk about it so openly?
It's an interesting thing, actually, because here, these songs that we've written, that Gonzalez and I, and that we're performing today. My son is with me at the moment, and I was thinking, oh God, it's a bit inappropriate. There's one song at the end which is called Fucking on Heroin. That is a slight joke song, but I was thinking, oh God, why do I have to write words that are so objectionable? But I suppose I've always thought that, in a way, you know, I liked, I don't write, put things in songs just to be horrible, but I like to put in, I don't know, I think there are enough songs that just talk about ordinary things, and I've always thought that part of my remit is to, you know, have pop music, but then try and use kind of inappropriate subject matter.
And also quite good.
For some reason, it entertains me and amuses me.
And also quite matter-of-factly right, you know, because I remember talking to another guy you might actually know. Let me remember his name. I think it was Darren Spooner.
All right.
And he told me that actually what he doesn't like, or didn't like at that point, was that people these days, that sexuality is so overexposed and kind of gives people, well, it kind of almost intimidates you because you see it so much on TV and all that. Mm. And I thought about it a lot when you said that, and I thought, actually, he's right. Mm. Do you still think it's that way?
Well, Darren... Although Darren, if people think Darren is, you know, uncouth and uncultured, he is right sometimes. Yeah, well, I think I read there was a thing in the paper the other day. I don't know if it's true, but they were saying that the Italian male is becoming not impotent, but heading that way. Italian men are going to the doctors about sexual problems more. One of the theories behind this is that people are bombarded with sexual imagery from quite an early age now. It's all over the internet. And so they have this virtual sexuality kind of... And in a way, then, when they come to actually trying to be sexual themselves with a real person, it's almost like... They're burnt out before they even begin because they've been exposed to it too much. Does that make sense?
It does. Yeah, so, absolutely.
And I can think that there probably is some truth in that.
What is next? I mean, you're doing this. What, I mean, you played the festival, the weekend festival the other week, which I thought was amazing. You did the DJ set. Don't know how that came about. It was quite good. But
I didn't know that I'd be able to stay awake at that time. You know, I'm not used to things like that.
But what's next? What's on the agenda? Are we going to expect some more from Mr. Cocker over the next 12 months?
Yes. I hope to finish... I hope that we will decide very soon about what we're going to do with these songs that we'll be playing tonight, these things that we've done with Gonzalez. And then I have been working on some songs of my own as well. And, I hope to get them out into the world as well and just see what happens. And then, as I mentioned at the start, apart from that, I'm going back to the Six Music Radio Show on the 1st of March. And an interesting thing with that is that we are starting to do a visual version of that once a month as well.
So, what?
So it will be like a... I know visual radio doesn't sound very logical, but it will be like a kind of the same format. So you look at things that have happened on that day in history, but instead of just having... sound archive pieces and songs, we will also be able to show film clips from the BBC archive and stuff like that. So
I see it coming. Mr. Cocker is going to be a film director soon.